Over the past few weeks, we've spoken to 100 sales leaders around the world to understand the impact of COVID-19 on revenue. And we've combined these insights into one single report that covers the immediate impact, the commercial outlook, the tech stack that you need, and actionable advice for sales leaders. You can claim this whole report completely for free if you go to ebster.com/COVID. That's ebster.com/COVID. This is Sales Ops Demystified, the number one most downloaded podcast in sales operations. We invite the brightest minds in sales operations onto the show to deconstruct the why, what, and how behind rep productivity, forecasting, metrics, and all things revenue. This podcast is brought to you by Ebster, the leading customer engagement platform for Salesforce. And welcome to another very special episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. Today, we're joined by Fabien Meunier, currently heading up sales operations at Market Finance. Fabien, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning, and thanks for having me.
So we're going to cover a couple of topics during this interview. First, I want to dig in, obviously, to Market Finance and the sales operation there, but also learn a little bit more about your plans to move into revenue ops consulting, as a few of other guests, either before or after their interview with us, have gone on to do that. So I think it's quite interesting to cover that journey as well. But to kick things off, I want to understand how you first got into sales operations.
Yeah, sure. So I started my career in sales, and I think what made me successful in sales was my resourcefulness. Like I really relied on the data that was available to me, the processes and the tech, whether that was at an individual level or later on like leading teams. And as such, I think the transition to sales up was almost natural. There was never like it. I just kind of fell into it. It was like a natural like progression. At the time, it started with the CEO assigning me like strategic projects, like setting up a customer success like team, then overseeing sales academy, and later on picking up Salesforce as a product owner. So that's really how I got into it, and then that led me to a sales operation role at Moody's, the credit rating agency, and then to my current role. Where it's maybe entered as sales operation and then moved to like kind of having a larger remit because of maybe the size of the organization.
Cool. So right now at Market Finance, how many sales reps are you currently responsible for, and how many people are there in your sales ops function?
So it's between 25 and 30 on the sales team currently. And currently the sales op team is me, myself, and I. We are at a plan to hire someone at the beginning of the year, and then it didn't happen quickly enough. And then obviously things have been kind of been put on hold for a lot of companies and us too.
Cool. And so one thing, can you share one thing since joining Market Finance that you've done in the sales ops function that's had a significant boost in productivity of the reps?
Yeah, sure. So I think one of the biggest, one of the things that have really changed everything, like the game for them, and now they're using Salesforce is building bridges to other departments in the company via Salesforce and kind of bringing other part of the business onto Salesforce. So it's kind of doing the non-sales operation things that have really helped on the sales side, because there was, when I first joined, the collaboration within the company was very was very scattered. You would have some of it, collaboration would happen via email, Slack, coffee machine chat. And it was very difficult. Obviously, there was no track record. Auditing was painful. Handover were almost impossible. So really bringing in everyone onto the one platform has really changed the game there.
So which other groups within the organization have you brought into Salesforce?
So we have our, so obviously we are a business finance company with a commercial team, with like a sales team, but then we have a risk underwriting team. So we have ops people and we have underwriter there. So this is mainly the team that has been brought on board too.
And how did that benefit the sales process, having these guys included in Salesforce? Or actually, I think what you did say was that it didn't necessarily benefit the sales process, but it's benefited the business as a whole.
Yeah, so I think it provides, it's when you are, when you think about the like a deal process, a deal life cycle, you always have, you have moment where you're kind of passing the baton from one team to another, and there can be frictions, like not trying to blame anyone on either side. There's definitely, usually both sides are to be blamed. Although if you are sitting purely in sales, you might just be thinking like, you're doing everything the right way, and it's all about the others. But the truth is, it's usually on both sides. But the key thing here is that it was by bringing on this process into Salesforce, we were able to create a lot of visibility, and all of a sudden, you create, well, simply people don't miss things anymore because it helps them to be organized. But you create a lot of, by creating visibility, you create accountability, and I think it's a very simplistic way to approach sales, like process optimization. But really, for me, creating visibility on a process is very often just solving the issues. You don't have to make any tweaks. So adding more technology, it just solves by itself because all of a sudden people are aware of what is happening.
Interesting. A quote that I really, really like, I can't remember where I heard it, but it was years ago. And it was so simple. It's awareness builds its own momentum. And so this is what you're saying here. You don't necessarily change something. If people can see everything, then that will, in theory, resolve any issues.
Yeah. And then if it doesn't fix the issue, then you can go on and do what else is needed. But usually it's kind of like surface those issues and making them visible. Yeah.
Awesome. So as you mentioned, in the last few weeks, I assume you guys have gone completely remote, being based in London. What challenges have that posed you as a sales ops lead?
So for me, the challenge is really, I thought was going to be to make sure the, like in this current environment, things are changing so quickly. You have to make like process tweaks on a kind of on a daily basis. We are launching new products to adjust to the market. We also have like loads of last minute data requests. And I thought it was going to be kind of a challenge because you can't really be like, people are not in one office. They can't be one person to kind of remind people and chase them. But actually I've actually been really impressed by the way the reps have responded to those kind of last minute data requests. Or adapting to a process tweak. It's almost as if being remote has made some of these things easier than back at in the office days. And I think it's because everyone wants also to prove that they are on top of what they are doing. It's really, I'm actually really excited to see how this is going to impact the way we will operate long-term because it's going to change, right? And working from like remotely is not going to be the odd things that people like me are doing. It's going to be more of the norm, I suppose.
For sure. I mean, I've been bullish on remote work for like 4 years. And so I totally agree. Because this period, we're like forcing people to work remotely and all these bigger businesses are going to realize that actually this can actually like people can be even more productive not being in an office, and then you also don't have to pay for the office. You know what I mean? But anyway, that's besides the scope of this podcast. So you see, are you saying that you've seen an increase in productivity because of the almost the accountability on the rep? Now they're remote, they feel like we have to show that they're on top of everything.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, and it's interesting you asking this because when I first worked in sales, it was kind of a model where there was a lot of micromanagement and people were not made accountable for things. So it was in an office based environment, but people were kind of the work was pre-done for them, and it was kind of like things were scripted and etc. And that's not like, obviously that's not giving a lot of accountability. And then later on, I moved to a setup where there was a lot of accountability with much more senior people, and they were, or even the more junior people, they were just given trust and could kind of like fly in their own ways. And I think in a way, this is the next level. Having people not within the office, they don't have anyone looking over their shoulder. It's again driving the accountability, I think we can assume that it's in most cases it's going to help with productivity.
Sure. Can we talk about the sales forecasting process at Market Finance? How does that work? Or what is your role?
Yeah, sure. So my role is to kind of oversee it and making sure that we have a forecasting process in place. And so it's like about finding the right technology to do it. So what you have to think about is our most popular product has kind of a short sales cycle. So the team forecasts on a monthly basis. And we've actually implemented a new kind of custom forecasting function in Salesforce earlier this year, which has been it's become very handy in these days, like in the remote setup, because it's again providing full visibility at all levels. Too much visibility, arguably. I think we've been able to, it's so obvious. So again, it's about creating the visibility, the accountability, and it's kind of a little bit over in the normal forecasting. With normal forecasting tools, you give the ability to sales managers and leaders to play a part, and they kind of consume the numbers and they adjust, inflate, deflate before it's being shared to the wider audience. At first, we deployed something that was very much like the raw data, and if that goes up to the CEO or the board level, like they don't do the gut adjustment, right? They just see the raw numbers, and you kind of lose the benefit of having forecasting and these kind of trimming of the numbers.
Got it. And then on the metric side, if you could only measure one sales-related metric for the rest of your career, which would you choose?
So I had to think about this one because I knew it was coming. I've listened to a few episodes, and I think I came up like I was. I don't know if you'll agree if you'll accept my KPI, but let's see. So what I'd like to know is what revenue will be generated in the next 4 weeks or 8 weeks or 3 months, depending on what, what's your sales cycle and et cetera. So it's really where, the KPI is what revenue I'll be generating in the next 4 weeks. You generate this with kind of like a prediction. So you have a predictive model, then you have the manual forecast we just talked about, and then you have maybe the gut adjustment from the sales leadership. But having this number and making it visible, the predictability that it will give it's buying you time, and it allows you as a team, as a company, to focus on delivering the actual numbers against the target, as opposed to kind of reassessing the past numbers, having like this huge focus on numbers, looking at them daily, that is really counterproductive. And then so it's giving you the space to deliver the numbers, and then it's also giving you the space to focus on the next stage, on your next quarter, your next product, your next GTM. So I think that'd be the golden one for me, is where am I heading towards?
Yeah, I think that's acceptable. So you're saying, depending on the average sales cycle, you would take that time period and the metric would be the expected revenue to be generated within that time period. And the reason why that's valuable is it's buying the sales team time. So you're allowing your, it's going to give you an accurate forecast of what's coming down the pipeline so you can tweak your actions to do more or less. Or
yeah. But and again, you're not spending like just too much time worrying about those the numbers and chasing people. You just have it, and you've built, you have a prediction model that is helping you to get these numbers as well.
Awesome. Okay, then now I want to change tracks slightly. You mentioned that you're at some point in the near future going to be moving into a consulting role focused on revenue operations. So I have two questions. First is, what was the driver for, I assume, leaving market finance as an employed person and moving to the consultant, but then also why revenue ops and not sales ops?
So I think the driver is I think when you work in smaller companies, in startups, you kind of find yourself as a lonesome soldier. Like you are just by yourself, and you end up being in your, you are the one of a kind skill set in the organization, and you don't really have to anyone in the company that you can turn up to really help you. Like you, most of the time you're the only one. And the reason behind this is because companies, they don't have a company of smaller size. They don't have the budget, or they don't even have the need to hire like an army or even like just a full-time sales ops expert. So I think that's one of the reasons that drove me, is by interacting more and more with other people, with peers, I realized that actually I could add value to other organizations by jumping in on a kind of this part-time consulting basis. And that would also be very exciting for me, because that's about being exposed to new environments. That's about like sharing my experience with more companies, with more wannabe sales up ninjas, and really having a greater impact than what I may have currently. And then the second part of your question is why kind of RevOps and not sales ops. I think it's kind of pretty much just a label thing. Maybe RevOps is more trendier than sales ops. To me, they're kind of one and the same. Maybe some people will hate me for saying this, but I think if as a sales ops, you only consider yourself as being able to drive changes in the sales organization, you're really limiting yourself. So even if you are working as a sales up, you are working with the other teams, and you are, whether you're just representing the sales ups and you're kind of the voice of the sales team, and then you are kind of the and on the other way, you're the voice of the kind of the company and helping the sales, like towards the sales team, and helping the sales team figure out about like changes that are happening, or process changes, product, etc. So I think you have to have this. And if you don't, so I think there's one analogy that I like to use, is you can work on sales, optimizing sales process and the sales organization as much, like you can do this every day, and there's always tweaks that you can make. But one of the things that might happen is you're making all these tweaks and you're building an amazing sales engine. But on the other side, the other departments, they're just not ready. They're not ready for that pace, or they're not aligned. And all the work you've done, all the optimization you've tried, you came up with all these great ideas, they won't have much of an impact because the company is not ready. So I think this is also the reason to kind of label it RevOps, is to have for people to understand that it's not just about the sales, it's the overall customer journey. I think that you have to think about every customer touchpoint, every kind of revenue impacting decision, and put them like, and see have this holistic view. If you want to have the, if you want to be again impactful as a sales op or RevOps consultant.
Awesome. A final question: who has inspired or educated you the most in sales or RevOps?
So again, I've got to work a little bit on that question. Got me thinking a lot, and I'm sorry, but I couldn't stick to a table for two. So it'd be a bunch of people on the list. There definitely are a few people from my time at Moody's, and maybe some of them I didn't realize at the time how helpful they were, like how big of an influence they had. But certainly Raj Bhatia, Shabbat Shaya, Alexis Ortizini, they were people who, all with their different style, they taught me a great deal on strategy, on adoption, and really how to navigate the corporate world where, when wearing the sales ops cap. I think so. This is a group of people, and it's really helped me. My experience in the corporate world really helped me when returning to the sales ops. And I thought it would be, I would have to drop a lot of my, like, the knowledge, but actually there were so many experience that I could just use again. And then more recently, I was lucky to work with Gavin Sumner, who was the VP of sales here at Market Finance. And he's been an amazing influence. He's not so much of a sales op ninja himself. I'm sure he won't mind me saying this, but he's really helped me to string together the experience I've gathered across all the sales op responsibilities. So you work on Salesforce, you work on data, on enablement, counseling, strategy, and he's really helped me to put this together and made me realize the power that we are, that us sales op ninja, as you've called it, is well, the power that we have, and again the impact that we can have on an organization.
Amazing, Fabian. Two things that I picked out from this conversation. The first, and this is the first time I think it's been mentioned on an episode, simply giving visibility to either the sales team or other parts of the organization of what's happening, giving them the awareness, can help solve those problems. And then the second thing, again, I haven't heard this before, is how if you are in sales ops and you're just focused on the sales team, then that is potentially limiting the impact you can have on the organization. And I do agree that even if we just change the name, that could help people within sales ops have a broader impact on the rest of the revenue generating functions and even other parts of the business like you have had at Market Finance.
Good.
I left you a space to comment there.
I know. I'm kind of surprised, because to me the like, these are not things I came up by myself. They like things I've kind of observed, and the whole idea of the visibility, it's so simple that I just use it. It's my number one. That's like my go-to solution. It's just creating the visibility. So yeah, if anyone can benefit from that idea, just go for it.
Awesome. And we'll be linking to Fabian below this video if you are interested in revenue ops services. Fabian, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me again. Have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. If you are listening on a podcast listening application, then please subscribe, rate, and review. And if you have any questions about the show, if you know a guest, or if you have any questions about sales operations, just hit me up at tomhunt@ebster.com. That's tomhunt@ebster.com.